So if you will, if you have your outline handy, turn then to the second lesson, lesson number two, which is going to be a chronology of the life of Jesus. Again, if you do not have the outline, then there are about five sets on the back table and you can get them after the class is over. And with regard to that, and again, the way we're teaching the class rather than as we did with regard to the minor prophets and have a slide for every point that is made, the slides will be supplemental up on the board. So it's important that you do have the outline and keep it before you as the lesson progresses. We want to start off by making note of the fact that when we're talking about chronology, we cannot be dogmatic about exact dates. And there are a number of reasons why that is the case. The first one is, when you look in the New Testament, you don't find dates. The way in which people 2,000 years ago, and in fact later than that, and certainly preceding that, the way they established their dating systems and such was not on an absolute number, but rather years since a particular event happened, or something along those lines, perhaps the reigns of kings and such, and we'll look at that in just a moment. So, in the New Testament, it doesn't say that Jesus was born on April 21st, A.D. 33. I mean, A.D. 0, which would be the... in fact, there wasn't such a thing as zero in the counting at that particular time. And some interesting things with regard to that we won't go into great detail about. So we can't be dogmatic about any of those types of things. However, it is possible for us to establish a basic chronology and be pretty accurate with regard to certain dates. And this is helpful to us. It simply allows us to quantify. This happened first, this happened second, this is about the time that it happened. And the way in which you do that, again, is by using extra-biblical sources. And from doing that, you can, with a great deal of accuracy, establish certain dates, at least the year, or within a few years of when these things happened with regard to the events that are found in the New Testament. And I thought that it would be a good idea, both with regard to the life of Jesus as well as the history of the New Testament church, in the next lesson, which we'll talk about if we have time or if we get to it next week. We can have those basic dates before us so that we can correlate by looking at the dates with the various epistles that were written and what events happened at what time and get kind of a time frame. I don't know that it would be as important to establish these chronologies in times past, but since we are so wed to dates and they're so important to us, it helps us, I think, a great deal to have an understanding and to have a good overview of what happened in the New Testament. But again, it's not an area where we can be dogmatic. And let me give you an example of it. How many times have you heard in preaching that is done, someone say that that the church was established in A.D. 33, on the Pentecost in A.D. 33. That date, A.D. 33, is one that you hear time and time and time again. And by the way, I really don't have a problem with the date, A.D. 33. There, again, is a sufficient... put it this way, I don't think the date is accurate. but again, we're not going to be dogmatic about any of these types of things. And if a preacher you hear preaching says that the church was established in A.D. 33, don't call him a false teacher or get upset at him because he used that particular date. It's one that is very commonly used. And while it may not be the most accurate, perhaps we're wrong in the chronology that we're going to give you. I think, again, that it's pretty obvious. But at the same time, I've used it myself in the past. And I think the more accurate date would probably be A.D. 30 rather than A.D. 33. And we're going to actually spend the next couple of weeks showing you and establishing for you why we think that that is the case. But what the accurate statement would be, if we want to establish the truth on the matter and be sure that we are not mistaken at all, is to say that the kingdom was established, or the church was established, on the day of Pentecost, the first day of Pentecost following Christ's resurrection. Now again, no date there. If you want a date, somewhere A.D. 30, A.D. 33, in that vicinity, but the accurate and true statement is that the church was established on the first Pentecost following Christ's resurrection. Now, I alluded to a book, I think, if not, I forget the man's first name. Maybe last week I mentioned this, but one of the books that I'm using in my study is called The History of the Church, and it is a commentary that was put out by a man by the name of Reese and printed by the College Press publishing company. College Press is the publishing company for the Disciples of Christ, which is, of course, a denomination that broke off from the New Testament Church in the late 1800s. They're very, very liberal now, but some of you may be familiar with the College Press the textbook series, which is a series of commentaries and textbooks that they used in their colleges that they established, which are very, very conservative. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why they don't make them anymore, because they're not nearly as conservative as they used to be and are a little bit embarrassed by some of the teachings that are contained in those books. But anyway, one of the books, it's a very thick volume called The History of the New Testament Church, and it is, again, a commentary on the book of Acts. And in fact, that's kind of where I got the idea of doing this. And so I'm using that somewhat. But what we're going to do as we look through the chronology of Christ's life as well as the chronology of the New Testament, we're going to use, to a very great extent, the chronology that he established in his, because I think it's pretty accurate. And his contention is that the correct date for the establishment of the Lord's church would be on Pentecost A.D. 30. And he said that there are some mistakes. And in fact, there are. Let me give you an example. Secular history has established that Herod the Great, who was the king that was reigning at the time of Jesus' birth, in actuality died in 4 B.C. He didn't die in 1 A.D. or the year 0, he died in 4 B.C. And so Jesus' birth could not have been at 0, which is the way in which we establish that calendar, but rather it had to be sometime previous to the death of Herod that Jesus was born. Now, why in the world is it then that we have the dates as they are? Well, there was a man, he was actually a Catholic monk, by the name of Dionysus, and the calendar which he established, the Dionysian calendar, is in actuality incorrect. And I forget, I think I've got the material on a slide that will follow in just a moment. But he lived 600-700 years after Christ. Again, after Catholicism had been established, and what he was trying to do is to establish and set up a calendar that would be more consistent with regard to the observance of Easter. And so he began to reckon dates and try to establish when it was, and he made a mistake. He just made a mistake. And he did not have the accurate secular data to establish exactly when the Lord was born, and so he made a mistake that was at least 4 years, maybe 4 to 6 years incorrect, and established his birth at a particular date that was actually not so. And so the reason why we are mistaken with regard to these things, or there are problems with regard to these things, is because he messed up. He's not an inspired man by any means. In fact, he was mistaken on a number of different levels. It's an interesting study if you look into that calendar. But as a result of that, when we talk about dates, often those dates that were established are not exactly so. There are a couple of things that Dionysus did. First of all, he messed up on his calendar. But individuals who take his calendar and say that, okay, we have B.C., which stands for before Christ, which, by the way, if you look in some of the archaeological texts and other, if you go over to Israel, for example, and look at all, instead of having B.C., they have B.C.E. Instead of saying before Christ, for example, in Israel, they're not going to say before Christ because they're Jewish. They don't even accept Jesus as the Messiah. And so what they call it is the Common Era. And so BCE stands for before the Common Era, because they don't want to put BC before Christ. So you'll have BCE or BC and then AD. The word AD, or the initials AD, stand for the Latin term Anno Domini, which means in the year of the Lord, which has reference to the year that the Lord was born. And of course, that again is a reference to the Dionysian calendar. And when we talk about it, we are living now in the year 2007 AD. We're talking about 2007 years after the Lord was born. Unfortunately, he was mistaken in regard to that. But again, with regard to that calendar, there are several assumptions that are taken. First of all, that the calendar is correct. Secondly, that Jesus was exactly 30 years old when he began his ministry, and that his ministry was 3 years. And if you take that and tie all of those things together, then it makes sense that if he was 30, and then it was AD 30 when he started his ministry, AD 33 when he ended his ministry, and the church was established on the Pentecost following his death, so the church was established on Pentecost AD 33, which makes sense if those things were so. Number one, the calendar's wrong. Number two, it's a mistake to say that Jesus was exactly 30 because the Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches he was about 30, but it doesn't say he was exactly 30. So we cannot know for a certainty exactly when his ministry began. So there are some problems with regard to exact dates, and that's the point that we're wanting to make with regard to these things. So how is it that we arrive at the dates of Jesus' life? That's the second major section in the outline. I want you to note a couple of things. First of all, we can correlate dates with regard to secular history with some degree of accuracy. For example, there is pretty much a universal agreement that the Greeks dated historical events by the Olympiads. That's something that is beyond dispute. And of course, the Olympiads took place every 4 years as they do today. What we find in the modern Olympics is a reconstitution of the ancient Greek Olympics. I think that it was in the late 1800s that they began the Olympiads once again. But the first Olympiad was held, and there is much, pretty much a complete agreement with regard to this, with regard to the Greek historical records, in 776 B.C. 776 B.C. There's a second thing that we can look at as we look especially at New Testament history. And you'll remember that in the New Testament, the two major cultures that existed, that were most influential at that time, even upon the Jews and upon the New Testament writings, is the Roman culture, because the Roman government was in control, and the Greek culture, because of the pervasiveness of the Greek language. It was the common language of commerce and the universal language of that day. And so the Greeks and the Romans had the greatest amount of influence upon the events which transpired secularly in the first century. The Romans had two different ways of establishing their particular dating system. And one was the establishment of Rome, the city of Rome. And again, there is some unanimity in the position that city of Rome was established or founded in 753 B.C. We won't go into great detail as to how they determined that, but it's something that is for the most part agreed upon. Also, they took the various rulers, and they will say, and in fact, this is done with regard to the census that took place when Jesus, of course, it led to the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem, because it is said that the census was commanded in the 15th reign, the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius. And so we can use that, and because that was the common way of establishing dates at that time. We can go back and find out when it was that Tiberius started his reign. We can take 15 years from that, and we know when the census took place. And so there are certain things like that that we can know. And Augustus, excuse me. I already messed up once. We'll look at some of those things as time continues. But anyway, with regard to the imperial chronology, and this is certainly important with regard to the first three, because the first three of these emperors are mentioned, and there is some prominent reference to these individuals in regard to the New Testament. So we're going to look at those, of course, all the way, if you think about it, to Emperor Domitian in AD 96. If you take the later date with regard to the writing of the book of Revelation, which is the close of the New Testament canon, most believe that it was written about that time. Some take an earlier date that it was written during the time of Nero. But regardless, these all will be utilized as we go through the New Testament chronology and seek to have some secular data to correlate the dates of the New Testament. You'll see how this will happen in just a few moments as we get into the actual chronology or events. So the Romans used their emperors or their rulers as a fixed point from which time was reckoned. And then, and here we find the discussion, and I know that I touched on this just a moment ago, but notice the bullet point there. Our calendar is based upon the calculations of Dionysius, and it was a 6th century. He was a 6th century Catholic monk based upon the birth of Christ. And it's generally recognized that Dionysius' calculations were at least 4 years in error, again, as the date of Herod's death, Herod the Great's death, has been fixed at 4 BC. So, why is it that he messed up? Why is it that Dionysius arrived at the wrong date regarding the birth of Jesus? Again, we alluded to this a moment ago, but one theory is that he fudged the date. In other words, he knew that he was making a mistake, but he had been given a responsibility, and the responsibility was not so much to make sure that you fix the date of Jesus' birth accurately, but rather to establish a calendar that would be helpful in standardizing the observance of Easter. And some historians believe that Dionysius saw some conflicts that existed, but instead of getting it accurately, he just decided to fudge it so that it would line up best with what was needful for the Catholic celebration of their holiday of Easter. He wanted to line it up with the earlier Julian calendar, and as a result of that, he just didn't get it right. Now, that's just one theory. There are other theories that abound with regard to why. But the point is this, and the significant thing, the important thing is that he was incorrect, and that we can establish that for certainty because of the death of Herod the Great in 4 BC. So those are some introductory thoughts with regard to chronology and the establishment of the dates that I thought were interesting and may be helpful to us as we use those as foundation, not only for the life of Jesus, but also with regard to the chronology of the New Testament church that we'll get into in the next lesson. So keep those introductory thoughts and foundational thoughts in mind. Now, anybody have any questions or comments before we actually begin a discussion of the chronology of Jesus' life? Yes, Dick.
Well, as you stated, the Bible doesn't give us any dates, but we know the future offer age is what, about 7 generations after, and so forth. And then in the Old Testament, in the Mosaic, they went through times there that we know when kings were, the judges, the 2 years and 3 months or whatever. That's how it started, but from secular history we can figure out all that out. And like that was so many years from the great earthquake. Well, we know that we figured out when the great earthquake it was, and then of course when we get into the New Testament, we have more.
It's actually interesting that in the Old Testament there's more data, but it's so much farther back that it's difficult, though there's so many more events that you can correlate to in the Old Testament that it's a pretty accurate thing as well there, though again, the farther back you get, the more difficult it is to be dogmatic about a specific date. And as you get closer in the New Testament, because of it's just easier when you're closer to the present day to come up with actual dates. I mean, there are some New Testament events and such where you actually can, let me rephrase that. There are certain things that are done that are found in New Testament times where you actually not only have the year, but you have the exact date that you can establish through these correlations that go on.
You have to go backwards.
Yeah.
So we know that the Israelites spent 400 years in Egypt, and then the 40 years in the wilderness, and go on and on, and you start to try to go back and figure what those things were.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just the thing about it is to recognize that because so much time has passed, we don't want to be dogmatic about a specific year. It's more of in this particular area of time. And what's more important for us is to say this happened first and this happened next and this happened after that. And that I think is the most helpful to us. And you know, this happened a couple of years after that did, or this happened 32 months after this did, and you know, things like that are helpful to us as we look at these things. But keep those types of things in mind. And now let's begin to talk about certain dates in the life of Jesus. And again, there you go. Under dates in the life of Jesus, the dates are taken from New Testament history, Book of Acts, by Gareth L. Reese. So I knew I had his name down somewhere. And that's from the College Press book. Let's start off, first of all, by talking about the birth of Jesus. And again, we would state that Jesus was born either 4 to 5 B.C. Now, we're going to establish some things. And I think it's interesting that you can become pretty certain about specific dates in his birth, in his life, by correlating the biblical data with the secular data. And we're going to try to do that. And again, not trying to be dogmatic, but being as accurate as we possibly can. And note a couple of things that was the case. First of all, in Luke, the second chapter, Augustus was the emperor. I said Tiberius and then Augustus. It was in the days of Augustus that the census was commanded. And in those days, the census was commanded, of course, as a result of that census. It was necessary because the way in which the Jewish nation reckoned the census for them to go back to their father's town. And, of course, Joseph, the lineage of David, of necessity, he had to go back to Bethlehem. And that, of course, is why Jesus was born in Bethlehem. But Augustus was the emperor, as established in Luke, the second chapter, and verse 1. If anybody's there, go ahead and read Luke chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 for me, please. Anybody want to raise their hand? Let me know. Okay, Kelly, would you please then?
And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. The census first took place while Quirinius was governing Syria.
Okay, so there are two points that are made here in the first and second verses of chapter 2. We've had, first of all, that Augustus was the emperor, and that Quirinius was it stated the governor, it stated in that text? Okay, governing in Syria. Okay, now I want you to make note of that, because we're actually going to discuss that a little bit as to what his office was there, because there are some individuals who think there's a discrepancy in regard to that statement. But and then in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 1, and I'll read that for you since I'm there, it says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. So, Jesus was born in the days of Herod the king. And the reference there is, of course, there are a number of Herods that are mentioned in the New Testament, but this Herod that's under consideration here was Herod the Great, who was the king in Judah at that time. So that's what we find with regard to some of the history there. Now, there are certain things that we can establish with regard to this that are significant. First of all, he was born before the death of Herod. He was born while Herod was reigning. So Herod was still alive. Secondly, he was born at the time of the census, which was decreed by Augustus in Herod's territory, as indicated there in Luke, the second chapter, in verse 1. And thirdly, the census was ordered while Quirinius was exercising authority in Syria. So if we can find a date or a range of dates where all three of those things are so, then we will have narrowed it with some accuracy as to when Jesus was born. These details can be correlated with historical data. And this is the correlation of the two that helped to establish the date. First of all, Augustus is known to have ordered several enrollments or censuses? Since I don't know what the plural of census is, but regardless, Augustus, maybe that's why he used the word in Romans, because I printed it from his, so I wouldn't have to say that. But anyway, there were several, but one of those was ordered in ABC. ABC, that's a long time before. Well, understand, it's just like anything else. You order a census in the United States of America, it's going to take a while for it to be completed. You know, from the time in which it's ordered until the time in which it's carried out. And in fact, there is, again, some secular history which establishes that it took a year from the time the census was ordered to the point where it was carried out in Gaul. And of course, if you look at the map and such, you'll find that that is something that is much closer, that province is much closer to Rome itself than the outlying provinces, of which Judea would be one. And so it's something that is well within the possibility that there could have been perhaps 2 years that took place before it was completely carried out or finished in the province of Judea. And again, the point that we're making here is that there is a way to correlate these things so that they all line up for a particular date that would be viable with the New Testament chronology. Those things can be correlated or justified one with the other. Now, first of all, the census. And you'll notice, again, that we would assert that the census, actual counting in Judea could have been any time between 8 and 6 B.C. With regard to that practice. Secondly, the death of Herod the Great. Herod, of course, we are told that Jesus was born shortly before his death. In fact, in those first 19 verses, we find not only the death of Jesus, but we find that you'll remember that he was told, the parents of Jesus were told to go into Egypt. And when they went in there, in verse 15, they were there until the death of Herod, that it may be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, "Out of Egypt I called my son." So it was not long after the birth of Jesus that Herod died. There are several sources, both Greek and Roman, that fix Herod's death on the Passover in 4 B.C. You remember that Herod had all the children, Matthew 2 and verse 16, all the children below the age of 2 that were killed in Bethlehem. And so it's reasonable to believe that Jesus was born sometime between the year or date of 6 and 4 B.C. Now, we don't know exactly when in that area it was, but we can narrow it down to a couple of years as a result of the call of the census as well as the death of Herod. Now, and again, we'll note this in just a few moments with regard to the reign of his sons, because those are mentioned and those can be fixed with validity. And every single one of his sons began their reign in 4 B.C., we see in secular documents and all to establish and correlate that. So Herod the Great died in 4 B.C. Now, the third point, and this is the one, and this is why I want you to recognize that it's important that we have full understanding of the secular events, because Quirinius, we are told there in Luke chapter 2 and verse 2, was ruling in Syria. Initially, some take the object to this because they take the position that the Quirinius did not begin his reign as governor in Judea until 6, or governor in Syria until 6 AD. That's what Josephus said. We've already alluded to Josephus as one of those secular historians that we can go to kind of establish the truthfulness of the Bible. So they would say, well, you know, what they're saying is that he didn't reign. Well, but if you understand the entire principle, it becomes very clear. First of all, there has been archaeological evidence that's been uncovered that indicates that he reigned as governor on two different occasions. First of all, he reigned from 4 B.C. to 1 B.C. and then later on, beginning in 6 A.D. following. But that still doesn't get us where we need to go, because he began his reign in 4 B.C., which would not allow him allow it to correlate with the earlier dates between 6 and 4 that we mentioned earlier. But the interesting thing was is that there were two positions of power that existed. It's kind of like governor and lieutenant governor, or something along that, similar to our situation in Texas. But something along those lines. There was the governor, who was the legatus in the Greek language, and there was also a position called imperial commissioner, which is from the Greek word quaestor, that is found. And in fact, before he reigned as governor in 4 B.C. to 1 B.C., we have found out that he reigned as imperial commissioner or quaestor from 12 B.C. to 4 B.C. And so in that period of time, he was indeed reigning or governing in Judea in the position of imperial commissioner. And you say, well, wait a second, but it says governor. Well, it actually doesn't. What was your what version are you reading from, Kelly?
This census first took place while Quirinius was governing.
He was governing. And in fact, the New King James Version is more accurate in that statement, because the Greek is actually the word hegemon, which does not specifically reference a governor. It has reference to governing. Now, the King James Version may render it governor. And others may as well. But the actual Greek word is a word that is a more general or broad term that could have reference to either of those two positions. And so there's no contradiction. That's the point. There's no conflict that exists. Now, discussions of these kinds help us. They help us to recognize, okay, here are the objections. Is the objection valid? Does the objection have substance? Is this a place or a position taken in the New Testament that is inaccurate? Or is there a discrepancy here? Or is there a way to correlate what is found in the biblical data with what is found in actually the secular data? And careful studies, again, even if there may be seeming contradictions that happen from time to time, careful study of those things reveal that indeed there is none. So I thought that that was an interesting point to make here with regard to that. So as a result of that, let us just make note again of what Reese said in his introductory comments on the New Testament church. Reese said this: there is great uncertainty as to the day of Jesus' birth. The New Testament gives no definite data on this point. The earliest reference of this to this subject, in early Christian literature is from there's a bunch of typos. I'm sorry. From Clement of Alexandria, about 190 A.D. So as far as his date, I thought this was an interesting thing because of Christmas coming up anyway, the Christmas holiday. But you'll notice that Clement of Alexandria, who lived about 190 A.D., is the first individual to refer to the subject of his actual day of birth. Now, what did Clement have to say? Well, he states that some thought the date of Christ's birth to be April 21st, others thought April 22nd, still others May 20th. Now, it doesn't mean that's when he was born, by any means, although it does correlate better with the account, which indicates that the shepherds were shepherding their sheep, which would indicate that most probably it would be in the springtime rather than the winter. The celebration of December 25th can be traced back as far as the 4th century. That's as far back as it goes, 400 years A.D. It seemed to have risen, or between 300 and 400 years A.D., seems to have risen in the West. The predominance of the Roman Church led to its well-nigh universal acceptance. But the fact that shepherds were feeding their flocks at night when Jesus was born makes it improbable that the season of the year was in winter. So we can't establish the actual date of the birth. Actually, that's as far as we'll go in regard to that, because the next is on concerning the baptism of John. But having established that, what we can say is that he was born sometime between 4 and 6 B.C. And that's just as specific as we can get. It may have been closer to 4 than 6. And yet we cannot be certain exactly as to when he was born. Maybe been closer to 6 than 4. Don't know exactly. What we can know for certainty is that he wasn't born A.D. 0. He wasn't born when Dionysius said he was born. Couldn't have been the case. Because the reckoning indicates that... and let's put it this way. If Dionysius would have wanted to do it, he could have sat back and said, okay, Herod the Great died in 0. Of course, then they didn't have a 0, so that's the other problem. But Herod died then, but he got it wrong. And as a result of that, since we use his calendar now, and we reckon back to the time in which Herod died, we say, okay, it went 4 years past the time in which 0 is reckoned, or the beginning of AD is reckoned, to the time in which he died, and that's 4 BC. It's all relative. And it can be somewhat confusing if we don't understand that. Okay, next thing. We'll be able to get through, I think, the baptism of Jesus here. The baptism of Jesus is indicated in Luke, the 3rd chapter. And so let's look, first of all, again, at... And of course, that's not the only place, but Luke chapter 3... where the reference is made. Luke chapter 3 and verse 23. Luke 3 and verse 23. We're told that Jesus himself began his ministry, notice this, at about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, the son of Heli. There we have the beginning of his ministry. And just preceding that, verses 21 and 22, we find the baptism of Jesus. So what, as you look in the biblical account, you find that he was baptized by John the Baptist in the Jordan River, and as he ascended, came out of that water, that signified the beginning of his public ministry. That's the time in which he began to began to preach publicly. So the genealogy there in Luke chapter 3 and verse 23, you'll notice that it says that his ministry began about 30 years of age, and that's the only time in which we are given a general age as to when Jesus began his ministry. But we don't know exactly how old he was. He was about 30. Now, what would you say with regard to about? Well, Reese takes the position that it could be between 28 and 32. He gives a couple of years either side. And they want to limit that to 1 year either side. In fact, I think that it becomes pretty obvious that probably around 30 is about right. But again, what he does is he seeks to give a broad, reasonable... range with regard to the dates, and then look and see how the biblical data correlates with the secular data to come to some exact day or exact year in which Jesus was baptized. And that's the next point that we're making here. And so we can take the text approximately 28 to 32 B.C., which means if we have the birth dates of 6 to 4 B.C., that there is about a 6-year range in which he could have begun his ministry, anywhere from A.D. 22 to A.D. 28. Now, we can narrow that down, but that is the range that we're going to start off with. And there are a couple of other things that we can note about this particular thing as we look at what was going on, who was in charge, who was reigning at the time in which Jesus began his ministry. And there are certain things that are established in Scripture. First of all, Tiberius was emperor. Pontius Pilate was governor. Herod was the tetrarch of Galilee. Philip, the tetrarch of Iturea. And Licinius, the tetrarch of Abilene. That particular passage is indicated in chapter 3 and verse 1. Notice there in Luke 3:1, in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate, being governor of Judea, that's where I got the 15th reign of Tiberius. It wasn't at his birth, but at his baptism. But Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea. Herod was tetrarch of Galilee. Brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea, the region of Trachonitis. And Licinius was the tetrarch of Abilene. So we find tetrarch having been three rulers, and of course those were the three sons of Herod the Great that divided up his kingdom and reigned in his place after his death. So there are the three or the data that we can correlate with what is stated in secular history. And then finally you'll notice in chapter 3 and verse 2 that Annas and Caiaphas were the high priests. Now that's an accurate statement, but again must be understood. Annas, who was the father of Caiaphas, had actually been deposed as priest, and Caiaphas was reigning as priest in his place, or serving as priest in his place. However, among the Jews, Annas still had a great deal of influence, and in fact, Caiaphas considered him a co-ruler with him as high priest in Israel. So it's not an incorrect statement to say that the two of them reigned as high priest, although Caiaphas had the actual office of high priest at this time. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we continue. So let's stop here. We will stop with, and I'll probably come back and just do a very quick run over of the biblical data with regard to Jesus' baptism. And then we'll pick up there and talk about the secular history that correlates with that in our study next week. Next week I will have the third lesson, which will be the chronology of the Book of Acts and the New Testament history that will be a companion to this, and we'll begin our discussion of that next time. So, appreciate very much your kind attention today.